All right, welcome everyone to the Beast Alliance's Hope Story Circle. This is our third time meeting. I'm so pleased to see all your beautiful faces and this wonderful day that we're facing today. I'm just going to do a couple of very brief I think that was Cindy's phone. I just muted. I'm going to do just a couple of very brief introductions, and then we're going to dive right in. I'm Terry Mason. I'm on the board of the Peace Alliance. We also have with us Yelena Popovich, who is our Teaching Peace in Schools lead, waving up. Hi, Yelena. And we have Liz Gannon Graydon, who is on the board of the Peace Alliance. And they are our host today. And our special guests today, we have Emily Wickman, who is on our advisory board and is a life coach and an amazing spirit. And we have Sylvia Gorstein, who is an author of many books and a mindfulness and meditation expert. And she is very dear to us. So I'm very excited to have all of you here. And I'm going to hand it off to Sylvia to do an opening meditation.
Well, I'm glad about that. And it's lovely to see you all. There are still people whose names are popping on and whose photos are popping on. So I'm just going to look for another minute as people join before I start to give any instructions. But I'll say that I've been fond of saying this last year, because people study mindfulness with different teachers and in different lineages. And mindfulness is often associated with mindful of breath, attention to the breath. And I really want to reassure people that mindfulness is about paying attention in a way that's useful and actually quite sustaining and leads to wisdom. And it could be mindful of anything. It doesn't need to be a breath. When you go to a mindfulness class, they often start with mindful attention to breath, because it's the easiest thing to offer as a focus of attention, because we're all breathing all the time. But you could also be paying attention to the sensations in your body. You could be paying attention to the sounds that you hear in the ambient space around you. It has to do with paying attention, not with the focus of paying attention particularly. Although breath is a very particularly good one, because we're always breathing as long as we're alive. And that there's a certain rhythmicity about the breath. So it's a good focus of attention because it's regular, more or less. It's kind of like a pendulum or a metronome, ding, 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 ding. If you really pay attention to it, it steadies the attention, and it actually brightens the mind's ability to grok, to get at what's going on. And these days, we need more than ever the ability to pay attention, because there are so many sources of stimuli, many, many of them alarming and agitating, because they're so full of affronting and sometimes frightening news. So I think everybody's here now. And I want to say that last week when I led this, I think I talked mostly about feeling in touch with the breath as it comes in and out. So we'll sit that way for a minute or two. Feel your breath in and out and in and out as much as you can. You can close your eyes, or you can open your eyes and look at the people who are spending this space with you. I imagine that your experience has been thus far something like mine. As soon as I stopped talking, I kept my eyes open because it's really vivifying, awakening for me to look at all these different faces that I feel to be friends, even though we don't know each other personally. But I'm warmed by the faces of other individuals who I know intuitively are my friends. And I'm recalling that the favorite meditation instruction, a favorite one of mine, one that I've been using for some years now, is this one, is being aware of my experience as it's happening and reminding myself of my intention to be a fully awake to that experience. That's really the instruction of mindfulness, to see what's going on, to grok what's going on, to get what's going on, and be able to say, even when it's unpleasant, okay, this is happening, and okay, this is happening. And for a while, I thought maybe that would be a good mindfulness motto to say to myself, what's happening now? What's happening now? What's happening now? Which would include I'm breathing in, or it might be a feeling of anger has arisen, or a feeling of fear has arisen, because everything happens. A thought has arisen, a sound has arisen. Some of those are quite benign, like a thought is often benign, but now these days not as often benign. And I began to augment that instruction from, okay, this is happening as now, to an intention. May I meet this moment fully, which means may I be awake to it. That's really the point of mindfulness, based on the understanding that if I know what's happening, really, I'll make the best decision. That's why. May I meet this moment fully. And my second sentence is, may I meet it as a friend. And these days, when I realize that on my walk down the bicycle path next to the creek, which I do all the time regularly, before the epidemic, I would be glad when someone came around a corner and be glad when someone walks right by me. And now there's a little bit of vigilance in my walking and in theirs, because if someone comes around the corner, you don't know if they'll walk too close or whether they're well or not well. And I'm finding in myself a little bit of, uh-oh, who's that? Did I walk far enough away? Am I 6 feet away? Am I this? And a little bit of alarm, even in my mind, just as I'm doing such a benign thing as walking at the creek. So may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. Those are my two sentences. May I meet this moment fully, just as we sit here. May I meet it as a friend. And then on my walk by the lagoon, may I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. So that I'm having my daily walk and I'm reminding my mind to calm down. I could change those two sentences may I meet this moment fully, relax. May I meet this moment fully, relax. But relax is not as pleasant a phrase to me as may I meet it as a friend. So I like those phrases better. So now you're on your own. Let's sit for maybe so we have enough time, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, feeling your breath, looking at the people, and saying, maybe on each breath, may I meet this moment fully, and on the next breath, may I meet it as a friend. May I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. It's really a blessing to yourself and to the moment. So do that. for the last minute that we sit together quietly, I invite you to, first of all, think of all the people who are here with you, and then open your eyes and see the people who are here with you. And then change those phrases to, may we meet each moment fully. May we meet our lives as friends. May we meet each moment fully. May we meet our lives as friends. And just be looking at the people and make blessings for this one and that one and that one. And if we say we, then we include ourselves in each of those blessings. So let's do about a minute of that. Let's all end by taking one breath together and out. And I think Yelena is going to describe the arc of the whole morning now.
Good morning. Thank you, Sylvia. Yes. So from this grounded, centered place that Sylvia, and from this welcoming, friendly place, I would say, I would really like to offer you an invitation into deep listening. So Sylvia will share a story with us, and Emily will chime in, and their offering is really an invitation for us into a practice of deep listening. Is that listening from the heart? Listening as a path to intimacy that reveals that interrelationship between all aspects of perception, right? The thought, the feeling, the sensation, intuition, the spirit. And really, as you listen to the story, it's listening from this beyond that rational, chattering mind and feeling that language of connectedness among things and among us. Listening with the intention to understand, and then listening with the intention to integrate. So really the invitation is to listen from that receptive, open place. And please use any mode that will help you hear beyond the words. So if the eyes are closed, if that helps, if the eyes are open, if you need to doodle, draw, move, take notes, whatever you need to kind of drop down into that place of listening. So yeah, so the invitation is for Sylvia and Emily to share and for us to listen from the heart.
Well, I want to tell a small story, and I want to put it in the context of of mindful awareness, that people practice various techniques for increasing the attention or steadying the attention ability of the mind in order, first of all, of course, to feel better, because when the attention is steady, we make better choices and we feel better. But in addition to moment feel better, I really want to have a bigger understanding of the world. I want to become, in the end, a wise person I want to really be grounded in the understanding, the specific wise understanding, that a kind response is always the most redemptive response. And a mind that's empty or less full or diminishing in its amount of negativity is a happier mind. So that's what I'd like to really be establishing in myself. And I've been aware that although being at home in a sequestered way for now more than 3 weeks has not at all been like a meditation retreat. That's a classic retreat where no one talks to you and no one looks at you and you don't read or write. I am talking to everybody I know and reading and writing and listening to the news. And so it doesn't look anything like a meditation retreat. And yet my attention is highly, highly focused. All of ours are. When we wake up in the morning, we think, I wonder how the world is. When we go to all day long, whatever we do is in the context of how's the world in this moment. So we're living in a time of heightened awareness. And I think in addition to it being alarming and concerning and all of that, has the possibility of transforming my mind. It's the same transformation of consciousness that would happen on a meditation retreat, but maybe on steroids this way, the same kind of new understanding. So here's the story. Yesterday I was going for a walk, and I only walk in my very near neighborhood, and I walk up and down different streets. And I live in a suburb of San Francisco, and mostly private houses around in my area. But there's a Chinese restaurant that's 3 blocks from where I live. And I've lived in this house for 60 years, and the restaurant's been there at least for 40. And I was walking along yesterday and looking around and feeling the breeze and being as present as I could. And I walked by that restaurant and I noticed there's a sign that says open from 4 to 6:30 daily for pickup. And I have the thought, yeah, but it's terrible Chinese food. And then I had the thought 1 minute after that, the last time I was in that restaurant was 40 years ago. I have no idea if it has terrible Chinese food. I have not upgraded my database in what's good and what's not good. You know, we have a database that reminds us, oh, look, there's so-and-so, I like her so much. There's so-and-so, ugh, I could do without her. Oh, there's that. And a lot of my opinions, which are cluttering up my mind, and many of them out of date, and many of them negative, like that Chinese restaurant, are lodged in there, unrecognized as unconscious, because I have that feeling, ugh, it's a terrible Chinese restaurant. Then I thought, I have no idea. Maybe it's terrible, but maybe it's not. And besides, they are open and they are making food for other people these days. And it's a small business. And if it can, and it's survived there for 40 years, it's definitely a very small operation. And it's been there for so long. I hope it survives this crisis. So how great that this Chinese restaurant is there. And I could feel in my mind how happy my mind was to, what do you call it? To dismiss from its mind, disencumber, that's the word I'm looking for, to disencumber itself of one more negative view. It, you know, it's probably not true. It wouldn't be there for 40 years if it wasn't good. But disencumber itself of one little negative view. And I thought, well, if I disencumber myself every day of one or two negative views, by the time this is over, I might be a much sweeter person. So all of a sudden, the situation is changed around, and I'm at least momentarily fortified about this might make me a better person. So we thought at that point that this little part that I'm telling you that story, first of all, because it happened to me yesterday, and second of all, because in planning for this morning, all of us together had the idea of asking you, which we will in a little bit after Emmy talks, what have you learned? What has changed for you during this time? So that's what I learned. I learned I have to update my database, and I feel better when I update it away from negative and into positive. So that's those two things I learned. Now Emmy talks about what she learned.
Well, I will just take a moment to add to that, because what I am so noticing day to day is that this call to presence that seems to be included in this phenomenon. And it feels like a forced presence. It's a little bit like when we go on a retreat, we're about getting present. And yet it's not a retreat because we're filled with all the news. We are swimming in the waters of hypervigilance around this terrible thing that has gripped the entire planet. So we can't undo that and just call it a retreat. And yet there is something about this phenomenon that's happening that has us all simultaneously sort of living in the moment in a way that I don't think we normally would. I am realizing how much of my brain bandwidth is spent planning future events, future this, future travel, future all those places, and that there's been this sort of a cutting off of future planning that's happened. And it's really allowed a little bit more room. This is the beautiful side of it, I think, that there's a little bit more room for what's happening right now. This sort of forced call to presence is an opportunity to know what's going on there a little bit better. We can, it's a little clearer in there. And like my mom was just saying, you know, it's like, I've had that thought. I've probably said it every time I walk by that Chinese restaurant, ugh, bad food. And yet we had so much clutter, that thought didn't really even have space to get registered. Like, wait a minute, that's an old thought. I don't need that anymore. I can pluck that out and let that one go. And that with this opportunity that we have here, as laced with painful things, I was really realizing yesterday, I'll share my story, talking to my daughter-in-law who's pregnant, who's going to have my son and his wife are having their first baby in September. And normally it would be so thrilling and exciting. We'd be planning the birth and we'd be talking about, you know, baby showers. And we're talking about having a baby shower on Zoom. And I could feel what comes into the presence is the sadness about that. And then also the awareness of the resilience of who we are as people, that we'll make the best of it. We will have a Zoom baby shower if we have to. That's how we meet this moment fully. And we meet it as friendly as we can possibly meet it, even though it's not my preference. And even though it is laced with sadness that I won't be able to, you know, the thought, I couldn't even try it on, that I won't be able to hold this baby when it's born, breaks my heart. And yet, it's what's here, and we will meet it. And so there just feels like in this whole phenomenon, we have this incredible opportunity to be in the presence of this moment and to start sorting out what's really going on in there, and to meet it moment to moment fully and as a friend, and to pluck out those thoughts that are really no longer in this world going to be a helpful thought to have, and to release it. Any old grudges that I have, any old beliefs that I have that really don't suit me anymore, I would like to let go of now. And I think there's an opening here. So that was just what I wanted to add to this. And that I think my point really was that I'm already changed by this. I am already changed. How I see my neighbors, I'm changed. There's the negative ways. There's the painful ways that this has changed me. But there are the beautiful ways that this has changed me as well. And in all those ways that I think we are all deeply, profoundly changed forever, I want to acknowledge and be awake to.
Thank you, Emily. Yelena?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Emily and Sylvia. So now the invitation is really to open to the stories and allow yourself to integrate that with your experience. To translate what Sylvia and Em were saying into the language of your experience. So to reflect, right? To be with a story for just a few minutes in a reflective silence. So you can drop down past the superficial layer of the mind and get intimate with a deeper personal meaning of their story. So the inquiry that's kind of guiding this is what Terry actually has put into the chat as the reflection, like a reflective exploration, but really telling a story of how have you changed based on this collective experience. And maybe taking the next about 5 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes, as a deeply special and sacred minutes of that investigation. So before we move into the breakout rooms to share this reflection with each other, just move into a deeper exploration for yourself and really think about what do you want to share with others. Be intentional, be selective with your story and allow the story to speak from you. So the invitation is really to show up fully for yourself and then show up fully for others. So let's take the next 3 to 5 minutes in reflection, and you can write, draw, just sit in silence. But this is that sacred moment of reflection that we want to invite you in.
All right, I'm going to move everyone into the breakout rooms now. There'll likely be between 3 and 4 of you in a group together. And let's see, we'll probably be there for about 12 minutes or so. So I invite you to introduce yourself to one another and then share your stories. And then we'll come back and have a group share. So within your group, come up with 1 or 2 distinct messages that you'd like to share with the larger group when you come back. You'll be invited to a room and just accept that and go and join your room. few people here that did not join your room. Are you not able to? Are you having a problem? David, Lynn, Nadia, Jared. Lynn, are you having difficulty joining your room? Oh. Regina? Nadia, David, I'm seeing you here instead of in your rooms.
I'll be right back.
Jana, are you having difficulty joining your room?
I often think, Terry, there are a few people who don't really want to join a room. We ought to have a nice waiting room for that. I wonder if that's a possibility.
It could be a room.
A waiting room.
My instruction says I should join breakout room 3. Do you have an instruction about that?
Yeah, you hit later if you're going to come back here with us. And it looks like there's, so we have Lynn and Nadia. Are you still here with us, Lynn and Nadia? They may not even be by their computers, but just open.
Yeah, that could be too.
Oh,
here we have somebody.
There's Jana.
There's Jana.
Jana, would you like to go to a breakout room?
Sure, I missed the beginning, but you can send me wherever you want.
Oh, okay, let me find a room for you. Let's see. There you go, you should get an invitation. You see it?
Maybe put those other people in rooms.
Well, they have to accept.
What happens if we will? Oh, so my great breakout room, you don't have to go to breakout room 3. If we all
I
have,
did, but I hit later.
Yeah, and it's fine if you don't join, you stay here.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
No, I was thinking if we all join breakout room 3, maybe that's our room.
I got room 4.
Yeah, I can change you to 3.
Well, that's one thought to put us all in a room. Just sort of future noting for as we move into this new era of meeting.
Yeah.
How to best orchestrate.
Nadia's having a problem with her computer.
I put the 4 of you into breakout room 3 if you'd like to go there, and I'll stay here and see if I can help the others.
Oh, I think we're. I don't have my invitation anymore. We're good. Yeah. We'll hang out with you, Terry.
All right.
And whoever else is here.
Yeah.
Somebody named Yvonne. How are you all feeling today? We didn't get to check in with each other, so we can have our own group.
Yeah, I was thinking it's not on exactly the theme we're talking about, but I was thinking of the interconnected nature of so many people, because before I got on, I'm in New York, and I was listening to Governor Cuomo because I find his presence very comforting. And he made a reference to the fact that his daughters are going through a tragedy with their cousins.
Yeah.
And they can't be there to comfort. And what I realized was that the connection is, one of Bobby Kennedy's granddaughters was lost in an accident with her young son. And that's Andrew Cuomo's daughter's cousins. You know, his wife was Carrie Kennedy. And so I was thinking of Cuomo's young daughters who are dealing with the fact that their father is the governor running this. Their uncle now has been so publicly diagnosed, and these cousins from their mother's side have had this tragedy. I was thinking the interconnected nature of all of us, even that tiny level at which we are playing out with a very public figure. And I was just holding deeply. Then I was holding that as I was looking at everyone come up on the screen, not knowing how I might be interconnected with people that I don't even know I'm interconnected with. So that's what I was holding in my heart as I was looking at all of you, how we may be interconnected in ways we're not even thinking about.
I think our collective vulnerability, everybody vulnerable at the same moment all over the planet by the same thing, everybody grieving
You know,
for different people, for different things, for dreams lost, for livelihoods lost, for businesses lost. I don't know that there isn't anybody, unless you can completely avoid this, that doesn't feel the sadness. And I mean, if we allow ourselves to feel, which is the vulnerability, to feel the grief. I went to a Zoom funeral last week. It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was really devastating. You can feel how unsatisfying it is to try to grieve separately on little video cameras.
Yeah.
It's that, it's an extra sadness around it. And that I think it's important to feel that, not get locked in it. But that's part of, you know, our global empathy.
Yeah.
I wonder what the world will be like in July or August, if we can go out at that time, if we're not all going to be wary of each other. Somebody told me yesterday that some people in Italy are like agoraphobic. They can't go out now.
Yeah, and in China too. I mean,
I heard that.
Yeah.
Can't go out, and
I can feel it.
A friend of mine who's whose daughter-in-law is about to have a baby. She and her husband live in Brooklyn, and they've been in Connecticut, out in rural Connecticut with their son and the daughter-in-law's family, because it's safe out there in rural Connecticut. There's no sickness. They can go outside. They can be in the garden. But the question is, where should she deliver that baby? And the doctor in the hospital that she's attached to is back in Brooklyn. And is it a good idea now that she's within 4 weeks of delivery to go back to Brooklyn and stay there to have that doctor and that familiar hospital? And that last I heard yesterday, they found a doctor in Connecticut that they prevailed upon who said, stay here and I'll take care of you, and she'll stay there. But everybody's lives are just, you know, you can make the biggest plans and you don't know.
It's interesting. I'd say that stopping making plans is like a huge part of my brain that has been sort of opened up, you know, because I'm not, no travel plans, no exploring where would be cool to go. I love to just daydream about things like that. But that doesn't seem available right now. It's just, there's no bandwidth for that. It's not the planning time.
I know, I'm sorry. Emily, I was thinking all night about your story last night, because Wednesday is my younger son's 18th birthday. And when you were saying how we can't even plan birthday parties, and I realized the biggest plan I can make was I saved up my day to go to the grocery store till today, because I said, just think about what you'd like me to make for dinner, and I'll see if that's in the store.
Yeah.
You know, that's the degree to which I'm planning his 18th birthday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think yesterday I spent the day grieving.
Yeah.
You know, and more than any day before, I got off our call and I had spent most of the day grieving, because I don't know how it's landing there yet for you guys, but on my Facebook feed for friends in New York, I haven't seen almost anyone who hasn't lost someone already.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just that prevalent.
Yeah.
In New York. And so... yeah, so yesterday was my day for grieving, and today is my day for the tiny little planning of my son's 18th birthday.
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful to you guys for this transition. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, Sylvia.
He lives at home with you then.
He does, yeah. My entire family is here. I live in a two-family house with my sister upstairs. And a couple of years ago, my brother, he's a reporter, and he lost his job in Connecticut, and he moved in to my guest room. So literally my entire nuclear family is in the house with me. So I'm blessed, you know, I'm blessed. Yeah.
See, I live within 20, 25 minutes by car of my entire quite large nuclear family. And I only see two of them, the people who live in this very building.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Passover Seder. By themselves.
Yeah. Did you get my Zoom invitation for Passover Zoom, Mom?
I did. How many people are coming?
I don't know. Did you RSVP? Well, you have to RSVP. Nobody's RSVP. We're going to have a Zoom Passover. Yeah. You know. Actually, I don't even see, I don't think we're not going to try to do any kind of Passover service. To me, we are already we're having a modern plague. We don't need to talk about the plagues that fell upon Egypt, 2000 years ago. Mm. We have a plague right now. And I think it's, releasing us from the bondage that we've been in, which is trapped in our own minds of separation. This is
a great line, Emmy. That is a great line. I'm going to send it to a bunch of my rabbinic friends this morning. We are trapped in our own minds by thoughts of separation.
Yeah. All right. Write it down for me if you want. That's a good one.
I'm writing it down.
That this is about, if we want to, I think that's the, if we grab this as an opportunity, yes. Without ignoring the horrible pain that it is, that, we do everything we can, we stay home, that this is an opportunity to come out of our own slavery here, that this plague has awakened us.
I'll tell you a thing that happened yesterday. I almost told it as my story this morning, but I had already said I was going to tell a Chinese restaurant. The Chinese restaurant is a better one to tell. But I think my mind has changed because I live, this is another reason why I don't want to tell it publicly, because I live just north of San Francisco, and I live in a county that's affluent. It has non-affluent people in certain areas of it. But by and large, this little town that I live in is an affluent town. People have rather large individual houses on individual pieces of land. And many of my neighbors have gardeners who take care of their garden. And among their tools is a leaf blowing. And we don't have a leaf blowing ordinance against leaf blowing. Town down the road has a leaf blowing ordinance, but not us. And every time that I'm just getting started, it seems like on something I really want to write or read, the people right across the lane from me, the leaf blower starts blows in my view way too long on a very bad sounding thing. And my mind churns up. What do they need it for? We live rurally, let the leaves lie on the ground. Why are they blowing? Yesterday, I was doing something and a leaf blower started in, and I thought to myself, what a great thing that he's still got a job.
Wow.
And I said, so my whole mind changed around the same annoyance about the leaf blowing, I'm going to start an ordinance, I'm going to call the board of supervisors. All of a sudden, I thought a whole new thought, and I thought I got a new mind,
We have a new perspective, the pandemic perspective.
Yeah. I know. We have a lady who comes to clean our house every 2 weeks, and she was supposed to come on Tuesday, and we said, stay at home with your family. I'll pay you anyway, but you need to stay at home. Yeah. And same with the gardener. I reached out to him and I said, come every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, whatever you think. I don't care if the grass gets long, and he decided he'll come every 2 weeks. He comes with his son and they live together anyway. So it's not like they're, risking each other, but anyway. I'm going to close the rooms. Everybody will be back in about a minute.
Oh, am I supposed to do something else? I'm just sitting here now quietly. I don't think I have to.
No, I'm going to do the closing.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Yelena will lead the sharing, and then Liz will do the close.
Thank you, Yelena.
I see people coming back already.
A bit marginalized.
Did we chat everybody, Terry?
Almost back. We're at 2 seconds, 1 second. Everybody should be back now.
Well, I've had that people.
Everyone should be back now. So Yelena, if you want to lead the share.
Yeah, welcome back, everyone. What's your story? What are those things that you want to share with us? Go for it.
I can hear everybody, but I can't see anybody.
Oh. You can't?
There I am. Okay, I see everybody now.
Oh, good.
I must have pressed the button.
Okay.
Okay, so we I don't know what that noise was, but from our group, what we were sharing mainly was a lot of concern and caring for other people and how much people actually care and feel connected with each other. It's an awakening experience. And it's just wonderful to realize that we are not really in our own little worlds all the time, that we really do care about one another, connected. And that's just very, very reassuring and comforting.
Josh?
Yeah?
I somehow got out. I don't know what happened.
I'm going to mute you.
Do you want to mute everybody and then people can unmute themselves if they want to speak?
Yep. Thank you, Tilly.
Well, I can go for our group. Yes, so we have.
Oops.
Oh,
go ahead.
Oh, and Jared, and really, what came out was a lot of. Kendra talked about the increased gratitude. Well, I don't know if I should share particulars of what people, but the increased gratitude she has for caregivers of her mother, who she's not able to be with, mm-hmm. who she's always felt gratitude. How I heard it, what I was hearing, there's been so much gratitude, but it's just deepened during this time. And she feels so blessed. And Don was sharing about his efforts and journey around world peace, and he did share a website. They focus on thinking about our language that we use and the importance of that language, mm-hmm. And it's a Peace Academy, mm-hmm. and. Jared was sharing well, and we about loving ourselves and the abundance for the world when we do that, and then the really reflecting on how connected we all are in humanity wherever we are, and yep.
Thank you. Who else would like
to? I'd like to get in next, our group. I'm Nancy. Yeah.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. From Chevy Chase, Maryland. I think the gratitude for all of those who are on the front lines came up. I'm much more aware of that, and the marginalized people who are not in the forefront but suffer every day and are taking this harder than people like us, and the paradigm shift that may happen after everybody has lived through this, and you know, their work, how their work has changed, and there was a worldview of, regarding just being appreciative of the earth, you know, what the earth provides us, and being aware of what we have to do to help the earth provide for us. And the other one was the personal side of having more time, having being, like I said, being able to breathe, just because we're not running around. Maybe we can do things better than we did before, having time to reflect. I think that's, those were the highlights.
Wonderful. Who else would like to share?
I will, if that's okay. My name is Christina.
And hi, Christina.
Hi. I was in a group with Pam and Mary and Dave, and we talked about, one of the first things we talked about was the role of, like the roles that we play right now in listening to how people are experiencing what they're experiencing. And kind of one of the key words in that was that this is an opportunity to really see what how we're going to play a role in moving forward through this and kind of the excitement for being a part of how we're going to move forward together. We also talked about the sacredness of nature and really the deep gratitude of even taking time to thank the trees, to thank the sky, to really thank nature as we're in it, and take that time to really just acknowledge that. And another thing that we discussed was in order to kind of learn something about yourself and move forward with it is sometimes that takes acknowledgement of the bad habits too. So acknowledging maybe some procrastination or not thinking and being slower or gentler with ourselves. So kind of taking time to acknowledge those things and be gentle with ourselves in that acknowledgement, but and then continue to move forward. And the last thing I think that we discussed was the concept of sanctuary, and sanctuary of place. And for me, sanctuary of mind, I'm really working on that. And also kind of the interconnectedness of the relationship between grief and healing, and how they connect, and how, you know, when thinking about them, we can validate grief, but still choose healing. So we talked about a lot.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Thank you. Any one more share before we close?
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Hi, this is Prophetess Arika from Dallas, Texas.
Hi, Prophetess.
I'm sharing it with myself, Nima, and Angie, I want to say, on the, we were in group 5. And we also talked about a few things, but the two, I believe, most important things we wanted to share. And one of the most, the first one was our awareness of our civic duties, our social duties, our civic duties as citizens. And that begins with helping others. You know, we were given examples of, you know, Angie was given examples, Nima was given examples of being a listening ear to those who wanted to talk, those who was ready to talk or not ready to vent, just thanking her for being there. And, you know, I was sharing how, you know, I would just go and pay for other people's groceries or give clothes away with, that still had price tags on them. Try to find a way to give housing, to get people in places to live, or just give them food to eat, you know. And even when I was in a hospital, though my stay had nothing to do with the COVID virus, there was a time where I was asleep, and the Lord led me to, while I was sleeping, the Lord spoke to me and told me to pray for the nurses and doctors and over this in this hospital. And so I woke up, told the nurse that I don't know how spiritual you are, but the Lord told me to pray for you guys at this hospital. And I asked her, I said, I don't know how we're gonna get the nurses together, but we gotta find a way. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, I didn't know this, she said that we have a huddle time at 11 and 3. And I said, okay, which time is best. He said, we'll do you, we'll do it at 11. And as I was explaining this, they said they were going to move me in a wheelchair, but then they decided to roll the whole bed down the hallway. And I did. I didn't know so many nurses worked at one time on that floor, but I do remember them gathering around, and I did pray. Now, what I prayed, I do not remember. But a lot of people, you know, came to me and was thanking me for the prayer. Of course, all glory belongs to God. And it felt so good to just be able to help people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone came and asked me to sing them a song, and I did that. I, you know, ministered to someone else. You know, it just feels good to be able to help people, and they're there. And when I say there, it means the place where they are now, because everybody is not in the same place. Mm-hmm. Some people are further along. Some people are just still in the beginning of accepting where they are, or even coming to terms with this, to this virus, you know, to what's happening to our nation. And so some people are still in shock, while others have accepted and then trying to move forward. And then others have family members who are dealing with it, and there's anger, as was stated before, grief, how is this going to turn out? So it's so many different aspects of emotions that are displaying in this time. And so we have to know how to accept or help people in there and not try to force them into their next place. Let them get there on their own, and we, you know, support them, and we, you know, encourage them, you know, along their way. For me, that is something that I've learned through life, and I've also learned through, you know, my education, being as a psychologist. And so, so that was one of the things that we talked about. I hope I'm not taking too long.
That's beautiful. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Another thing that we talked about was things that were happening and how long it took for certain parts of the country or state to react to what was taking place. And I was saying that for my county, for my state, they had already identified a hot spot in as Dallas County or Dallas, and they had already identified a hot spot, but yet withholding a response to how they're going to deal with this community outbreak in just one city or county. And before they start to even doing something, it had already spread and hit like 4, 5, 6 other counties. And then even when it hit those counties, we didn't have the things that we needed to help with the first community outbreak. And now it's like, oh, every day the numbers are just jumping up and up and up and up and up. And of course, then we hear the president say, well, they're going to build this, use this to build this hospital. So I thought to myself, like, for me, my question was, what were they thinking when they took the people? You know, I expect people to be able to get off the ships who were sick, asymptomatic, or, you know, just no whatever. I expected everybody to be able to get off the ship. But I believe that there should have been a plan already in place for them. There should have been a quarantine group of medical staff for them, so that we can make sure others did not. You get what I'm saying? But it felt like to me that they were bringing the virus to certain places where they were allowing people to get off. And so then you see that. I'll give you a personal story where they talk about essential workers. For me, my sister works for a home healthcare company. Mm-hmm. But she is not a nurse that has to go out. into the field. She works in the HR department, and then she works over the houses part where she does like their intake paper, rolling paperwork and stuff like that. So she could actually work from home, right?
Yeah, Prophetess, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to put a close to your share.
Okay.
We've gone over time, and we need to close the whole call. People are dropping off. So I really appreciate your thoughts, though, and your concerns, and the interconnectedness of everybody is so powerful. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Liz, can you put us to a close? You're on mute.
Yeah.
Now you're off mute.
I want to thank everyone for sharing. I want to hold Terry in a special place for holding the space, and for Emily and Yelena and Sylvia for creating the beautiful context in which we shared. I just wanted to share by way of closing. I live here in a home with my 20-year-old son, my husband, my 20-year-old son, and my soon-to-be 18-year-old son. And one of the questions they keep asking is, what's next? You know, what's next? And I said, none of us know. You know, my favorite teacher of peace building said to me, the fastest way to change the world is to change the stories that we tell. You know, and in this moment, we have a chance to tell the new story. And by way of closing, the words that kept thinking me, I thought of a song. It's an older song now. It's called Unwritten. I don't know if you know the song, Natasha Bedingfield. And I wanted to share the very end of that song as our way of closing. No one else can feel it for you. Only you can let it in. No one else can speak the words on your lips. Drench yourself in words unspoken. Live your life with words, with arms wide open. Today is where your book begins. The rest is still unwritten. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank all of you for meeting this moment with that openness to just sit with what is and be the ones who help tell the story of what we write next together and separately. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone,
thank you
for joining us. We'll be here again next week with a special speaker.
James Barras.
Thank you. James Barras. I was looking for his name. James Barras will be our guest next week. So we're looking forward to having him join us. And thank you, Sylvia and Emily, for joining us on these 2 weeks.
Thank you so much.
We're very grateful.
It's been a pleasure to be here with all of you.
Thank you to all of you for all that you're doing and all that you're being in the world today. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Love and light.
Thanks, everybody. Love and light.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, unmute now. I unmuted.
Yes. Thank you for joining us today at Peace On. We hope that it inspires you to engage in dialogue in your larger community. Peace On is your source for inspiring conversations and information from thought leaders across the spectrum on topics related to the strategies of building peace, fostering nonviolence, and creating a world that thrives, shifting our understanding toward empathy, compassion, and connection. Peace On is brought to you by the Peace Alliance, found at peacealliance.org.